Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Press Play Action here on Jersey Nerds Productions. I'm Mitchell Lee alongside my good buddy, Brandon Two. Brandon, are you ready to get back into the Quentin Tarantino marathon? What do we call this thing?
The Tarantino-verse, right? Like, we're in his...
Tarantino-verse?
We're in his universe, right? Yes.
I don't think we're crossing over at any point. Like, I don't think... Like Samuel L. Jackson, we'd run into some problems because he's basically in every movie and he's not playing the same guy. Like Samuel L. Jackson in Pulp Fiction and Samuel L. Jackson in Django Unchained would hate each other.
What if it's all like connected though? It wouldn't shock me if he's like comes out like 30 years later. It's like actually Bill and Django are like the same timeline. Like
whenever Samuel L. Jackson dies in one movie, he gets reborn and then he's in the next one. So.
Right, it's like a reincarnation. Yeah, it wouldn't shock me. Well, he's in one of these movies.
But you really have to explain Brad Pitt with Inglourious Basterds and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. But we're here today to talk about Kill Bill Volume 1 and Volume 2. Now, this is going to be a little bit different than our other conversations that we've done. If you're a long time, and by that I mean listening for a few months, listener, you know that what we like to do is we like to talk about one movie, grade it, talk about the next movie, grade it, and then do a spoiler discussion. But this movie, and I'll just go ahead and dive into it right now, was originally supposed to be just one movie. It was supposed to be one movie, and it just got split into two parts because there was so much stuff.
Yeah, that makes sense.
They thought, let's just make two of these. So we're going to talk about this. We're going to talk about Volume 1 and Volume 2, but we're basically going to have one long conversation, and we are going to talk about it in full spoilers the whole way through.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard not to spoil.
There's basically no other way to talk about it, so if you want a spoiler-free discussion about the Kill Bill movies, I'm sorry, that's not really what you're going to be getting here. Go watch them, form your own opinion, come back. However, I am going to go ahead and get this out of the way, too. I know that we're having these conversations. We're going through the IMDb Top 250, breaking it up into digestible pieces, I guess, because that thing is a monster. There's a lot of movies on that, you know, 250 of them, to be exact. And so we're kind of breaking it up into, all right, now we're at the Tarantino part, because he's got quite a lot of movies on that list. And when there's 250 movies on a list, 250 movies that are some of the most beloved movies of all time, there are going to be some times where I can't get on board with the love and praise that everyone else is heaping on a movie, and I might still really like it. I might not really like it, but I'm not going to love it the way that everyone else is. And this is going to be the first of those where this movie, but these are my two least favorite Quentin Tarantino movies, and I don't think it's close for me personally. I love the guy, but this is also, this duo of movies for me, and we'll get into why, is what keeps me from saying that Tarantino is like my all-time favorite director, because so many people hold, especially Kill Bill Volume 1, on a pedestal where it's considered to be one of his best movies, and I am just not... I'm not able to quite get there, Brandon. I hate to say it.
I don't think it's quite as worse as you're putting it. I think it's more like, as you can tell by my little name at the bottom, is it mid? It's probably like a mid Tarantino movie for me. At least
for
one
Tarantino.
Of these. Yeah, at least one of these. I still think they're good movies. And I think some of them have Tarantino vibes to them, and you can definitely tell Tarantino is directing, writing, his fingerprints are all over these two movies, but it just didn't work for me quite as well as, say, Reservoir Dogs or Django, as we've already, you know, reviewed those two movies. I absolutely adore those movies and love them. These movies aren't quite on the same level, but I do appreciate that it is still Tarantino, and you can, like, really tell it's Tarantino in some parts of the movie.
All right, let's get into what this movie is about. It stars Uma Thurman as the bride, and she is on a revenge quest. This is very much a revenge martial arts type of movie, and she's about to get married, but she is killed, although, you know, she's not killed. She's left for dead by a group of assassins that she used to work with called the Deadly Viper Assassination Squad. And played by Lucy Liu, Michael Madsen, Daryl Hannah, Vivica A. Fox, and they are led by Bill, played by David Carradine, and they try to kill her. They think they've succeeded, but they haven't. And after being in a coma for 4 years, she goes on her quest for revenge to kill each and every one of them, and most notably, Bill. Hence the movie being called Kill Bill, because Kill William just doesn't have the same pizzazz as Kill Bill. And this movie, like I mentioned, was originally supposed to be just one long movie. And who do we have to thank for the fact that it is two movies? You know him, you hate him. He's going to die a terrible death in prison.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, Harvey Weinstein was... He was kind of known for having people shorten their movies, and he suggested that, hey, you have a lot of things in this movie that I know you don't want to cut, but if you want to keep this movie from being a, you know, 3.5 hour, 4 hour, just like monstrosity as far as length goes, let's split this thing into two movies. You can keep all the stuff that you want to keep. Like there's an anime sequence in this movie that I thought was pretty good. And yeah. that was one particular sticking point. Like, hey, you get to keep this. And the movie has a lot of flashbacks and kind of fleshing out character relationships, what certain members of this assassination squad are good at. And there's a lot of, I mean, if you take the flashbacks out of these two movies, you're cutting like 40% of the movie. So
right.
I can understand why Tarantino thought this won't work. It won't hit the same without these things. So let's just go ahead, bite the bullet, two movies, and
so,
that's what we have.
Yeah. My question would be, did they have like it all produced, like production wise, it was ready to go as like one movie?
Yeah.
And then they just made the decision to like edit it and like cut it? Because you can kind of tell, I think I texted you like, oh, holy cliffhanger. Like, I can't believe, like, the cliffhanger that they kind of left off on. But, like, yeah, it makes sense now, like, if they made it, you know, one movie and then kind of, like, just edited it to be two, basically.
They filmed it as one movie, which is going to be Kill Bill. And the movie was set to come out in October of 2003, and it was announced that it would be two parts in July of 2003. So my guess is they announced that after they had done quite a bit of the editing work. You know, you're not going to announce that and then have all of that. That announcement, if it was made that late, it seems to me like it would also be preceded by and we're moving the release date back. But it seems like they had already done that before they announced it. So that gave them the time to be able, because they released volume 1 October 10th 2003, volume 2 April 16th 2004.
Oh, so okay.
This was like really, really close.
So they were
only
almost,
had to wait 6 months.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you absolutely love Kill Bill volume 1, if we transport our minds, if we time travel back to 2003 2004, you're probably like, wow, I just got out of the movie and saw that. Like, I can't wait for volume 2. Like, yeah, it was coming. So they might have had trailers for both movies in the theaters at the same time. I mean, I know they did it, but they could have done that.
But pop quiz, Brandon, you ready for this?
Yeah.
There was another movie series in 2003 that had a movie come out in May, and the sequel to that movie come out in November of the same year. What movie franchise is it?
2003.
2003, Brandon.
Movies.
I'll give you a hint. Say, it's the second and third installment of the franchise.
I want to say Harry Potter, but is that that's not?
Nope, correct. It's not Harry Potter.
It was Maze Run. No, not Maze Run. That's too late.
But that's not even a little true.
Yeah, it's not even a little true. Well, what is it? I'm blanking on 2003.
We'll get to it down the line because the IMDb Top 250 has The Matrix on it.
Oh.
Matrix Reloaded came out in May of 2003, and The Matrix Revolutions came out in November. So
is that the same thing with Matrix? They were just like, they basically made two films, and then they were like, let's just cut it in.
I haven't done any research for The Matrix for this, Brandon. And we will get to The Matrix probably later this year, if not early next year. Right. So that.
But
that,
I mean, it feels like a similar situation. It feels like a similar situation where they probably had two movies or like a movie, and they just decided to edit it.
I think they just filmed those back to back, and
back to back, like as quick as possible. They were like, let's capitalize on The Matrix, you know, momentum. But this one's kind of weird. The way they just, like, the cliffhanger is weird. And it's just kind of like drops in the middle of the movie at the very end. And then it's like, okay, like, here's Kill Bill Volume 2. And then it picks up with the same scene from the beginning of Volume 1. So I almost did a double take when I was like, am I watching this? Am I watching Kill Bill Volume 1 instead? I was like, oh no. But yeah.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, Harry Potter does the same thing, where at the end of the first one, something happens, and we'll get to Harry Potter down the line too. And then at the beginning of part two, you see that thing, that, you know, giant monumental thing that happening again, just to kind of remind you and set the tone. Right. So I think that that's kind of the same thing that Kill Bill was doing here, where this movie starts off and you're in it right away, as it's just like a seemingly peaceful suburban neighborhood, and Uma Thurman's going over to Vivica A. Fox's house, and they just start like trying to kill each other in Vivica A. Fox's house. And I thought that was one of the stronger sequences of either of these two movies.
Yeah, definitely.
Was you also felt the, and I do think that there's one thing that this movie does well in parts and not well with others, and I'll get to it, is with this particular interaction, I felt the time behind these two. I felt like these were two people that were friends, that something happened, and now it's, I'm gonna get you, bitch. Yeah. And I love the fact that this movie just throws you into it right away.
Yeah, this scene between Vernita Green and the bride, I think it's hilarious, because it's at one point interrupted by Vernita Green's daughter, Nikki, coming home from school. And then they both turn and they have like a knife behind their back, and they're like, you know, obviously Nikki's like, what's going on? Their house is like destroyed. It's like, oh, I'm just talking to an old friend. Like, go upstairs.
We're just playing.
Yeah, we're just playing. Like, go upstairs, Nikki. Like, it will be okay. And then it's like, yeah. Part of me was kind of shocked when the scene in the kitchen happens. But then I was also like, nah, that was like to be expected. They definitely were going to kill each other at some point. I don't know. It's such a strong opening to the movie, but it's also very funny to me. And I texted you this like immediately as I started watching. I was like, oh, so they're just going to like bleep out her name. Like, that's like a plot choice that they're going to do. Like, they're not going to reveal her name to you. I think that was an interesting choice by Tarantino.
I think that this movie, and I'll just dive into it right now. And if Quentin Tarantino heard this, he's probably going to say, oh, you missed the point. I was going for this, that, or the other. And it's like, okay, I understand the movie that you were trying to make, and I'm glad that you made it. I'm glad that this movie got made and made money and people love it. But I'm also going to express my personal opinion about things. I think this is way too over-stylized. I think that we gave him praise in particularly Django Unchained for the needle drops in that movie. And this movie had needle drops that I felt made no damn sense whatsoever. They were just there to be references or callbacks to stuff that Tarantino personally likes. There's a There's all sorts of very strange, like, sound effects and things. And again,
yes,
there are people that love this movie for that stuff. Dude. And so I want to sit here and I want to say that if this doesn't sound like it would bother you, go watch it. Like, but for me personally, it took me out of the movie that I was watching.
Mm-hmm. I felt like
there were so many scenes that were set up trying to be iconic, trying to look cool. Didn't really get the vibe of, like, Django Unchained is cool, but doesn't feel like it's trying to be. This feels like someone's making a really hard effort, and it just doesn't really hit the same.
I wonder if you asked Tarantino what he would consider as his better movie. I think, because obviously this movie was before Django, I think he understood how to make it look cool without trying from doing this movie. And doing Kill Bill allowed him to kind of pull off what you're talking about in Django. Because he does use some of, like, the stuff that you praised in Django. Like the zoom in camera with the, like, whooshing sound. That's in there like two or three times. But it's to, like, whoosh to, like, a samurai sword or something.
It's not
like closing up on, like, a person's face, you know? It's just like different styles, I guess.
There's a lot of very, like, cartoonish sound effects in the fight scenes, and I get that.
Yeah, I mean,
again, if Tarantino was listening to this, he would say that he's paying homage to the samurai stuff that he likes to watch.
Is doing, like, the Bruce Lee Kung Fu movie, like, homage to all those movies where you get, like, the Foley artist with the sound effects and all that stuff. Like, that's totally what he's doing. I can guarantee that, but I kind of agree with you on that standpoint, but I also think, like, it's kind of cool that he's paying homage to the Kung Fu movies. So
I also have never seen those. I have no nostalgia for those, and it feels a little bit more like an inside joke that I'm not in on because of that. And for maybe, so
I've heard people that some of those movies are awesome. Like,
I bet they are. So, yeah. But there are movies, like, for example, I'll say La La Land. A lot of people said that La La Land was a love letter or kind of ripping off, you know, French musicals from, you know, 1920, 1930, maybe some of the, you know, Jean Astaire, am I saying that right? Like musicals from like the 1930s, 1940s, or Jean Astaire. And I feel like it's a movie that you can watch and get wrapped up into the environment and the characters without any of that. This feels like
you have to see the Bruce Lee Kung Fu movie.
You have to do homework. This feels more like a love letter than a movie with appreciation for its influences in it, the way that something like La La Land was, at least from, or even Pulp Fiction had a lot of that as well. You know, Django Unchained, you know, we'll get into it with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. This is not new territory for Quentin Tarantino
to be pulling from the things
that he loved. Yeah. And I think that there are movies that he does it better in than in Kill Bill. But that's not to say that Kill Bill is bad. I think that Uma Thurman in these movies is fantastic. I really think that you buy that she could kill everybody, but you also feel the pain, the want for revenge. I think that Uma Thurman delivers an amazing performance in both Volume 1 and in Volume 2.
Yeah, I do too. I think it's incredible acting. Well, I mean, this is very obvious, but if she doesn't work, the movie doesn't work. So she has to nail it, and I think she does, for the most part. There are a couple of fight scenes where I'm like, okay, this is probably going on a little too long, and like, are we sure she can kill all 88 bodyguards? Brandon. It's not. Right. That's the joke. There's not
88. I thought that was funny.
Yeah, that was pretty funny, too. That was a great joke. But I just, there's some parts where I'm like, okay, this is kind of going a little too, like, drawn out. But for the most part, I think the fight scenes are kind of, you know, I think it's a mixed bag, but I think the fight scenes work for the most part. In volume one, I think it's less than volume two, to be honest with you.
You think that there's less of that issue, or you like it less?
I like the fight scenes in volume two more than volume one. And I don't really know exactly okay. what volume one, like, I maybe it was just more drawn out to me. I think once she gets to, you know, Oren Ishii's place, in volume one, and there's like back to back fight scenes, basically, I just think it's a little too drawn out. And that's probably for me. People would be shocked to hear this. I think those are the weakest parts of the movie.
Which parts?
The fight scenes when they're like in the dojo, or like she's trying to kill Oren, Lucy Liu's character. Yeah,
I wouldn't say the weakest parts of the movie, but I think that's something else that keeps me from being able to.
Right, they're not right. Like A plus fight scenes where I'm like, no. Oh my god, this is amazing.
It feels like they keep, and they do this with both of the fight scenes. You know, I'll just go ahead and get into it. There's a, we'll get into full spoilers, but there's a fight scene between her and Lucy Liu as Oren Ishii, which I'm sorry, I'm just gonna call it what it is. I've never thought Lucy Liu was a good actress. I just don't think she's good in this, and I can't remember anything that I've seen her in where I thought she was good. Now, there's probably something that I'm missing, but between the Charlie's Angel movies, Shazam 2, and this, I'm just not a Lucy Liu person. Just not. And that fight scene always felt like they kept you at a distance. And it was supposed to be this very, like,
that was the goal.
I've fought all this way to get to you. And it felt like I never had any doubt that she would win that fight. And the final kill, the camera's kind of at a distance, and you don't really get to... It's supposed to be like a wide shot, but it's not... It's not a very impressive wide shot.
White work, yeah.
Yeah, it feels more like you're on the ground just kind of looking at, you know, it's very strange.
Maybe it's what they were going for. Maybe that's what they're catching.
It is. No, it's very purposeful.
Yeah.
Because they do the exact same thing at the end of Volume 2.
Mm-hmm.
There's a fight scene in Volume 2 where a character breaks it, and we'll get in the spoilers with that when we get to Volume 2, where a character breaks out a fight move that you've never seen before. It's mentioned once. You've no connection to it. It happens, and then the character just... You're at a distance, at a weird angle, and it's like, I didn't like it when you did it for Volume 1, and I like it less when you're doing it now.
Right. I will say, I think some of the moves inside of the action sequence, especially the big one where she's fighting all of the assassins, like the bodyguards off, and she's just, you know, killing person after person after person, I think some of those moves, some of those fight scenes, some of those like little clips inside of it is awesome. I think it's like really cool. I think it's a little bit dragged out. I will say my favorite part of the fight scenes is the silhouette. I feel like I've seen it before without actually seeing the movie. Like, I've seen that scene in particular, and I think it just looks really cool.
It was very opening credits to Avatar: The Last Airbender at points.
Right, and it looks awesome.
I appreciated, but
yeah.
My favorite part of Kill Bill Volume 1, first of all, I really liked the stuff with Hattori Hanzo and the sword, and how she has to get the sword from this just amazing swordsmith that's given up making tools of violence,
right,
and weapons of death. Yeah, exactly. But he's like, you know what? I'm going to help you. Because
I hate Bill so much.
Yeah, it's that, but it's also like just knowing what happened. I've got to do this.
I'm going to break my oath. Yeah. To do
And I liked that. And there's a kind of a groove that this movie was hitting around, maybe not the halfway point, but a little bit after that, where that, and then you see the backstory and you get to learn a little bit about Go-Go, one of Oren Ishii's
bodyguards. Yeah, her bodyguard.
And I really liked that character. And I thought that the fight scene between her and the bride was the best one in these two movies.
Oh, yeah.
The best one-on-one combat scene in these movies was between those two characters.
Yeah, it's either that or L in Volume 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. I do like, while I do, while I did say it was like drawn out, what it basically is like one small fight scene and then the huge fight scene where she's fighting off all the bad guys, and then another small fight scene with Gogo. And then after she gets to Oven, she, you know, that fight scene doesn't take as long as some other ones. And I think it all, like, flows. It's just a weird flow to it, I guess, is my point. Like, basically, what Tarantino did was he just stacked up, like, 35 minutes of fight scenes into, like, one ending of this movie. And it was kind of weird.
There are two recent movies that I think do what this movie was trying to do better. And yeah. I'll say that John Wick Chapter 4 has a lot of those, like, I'm fighting large groups of people. Right. But at the end, I'm trying to get to this one person. And I think that did it a lot better, where you feel the tension of that last scene a lot more. And also, you know, I know I've been, I've had this movie, you know, down my throat, in my mouth for the last month, but Dune 2, where the end of the movie has this big fight scene between two characters, hand-to-hand combat, and it's not very long. It's a pretty short fight sequence. If you know, we're really talking about,
some people were mad climax, about that, to be honest,
climax fight sequence. But let me tell you, you felt the intensity, you felt the stakes in ways that I never felt in this movie.
That's fair.
And yeah, I think you felt the history of that. Of you, you felt like it was this fight had decades, and you know everything was leading to this. Whereas Kill Bill, even when she gets to Bill in volume two, I never quite felt that. And I think that was a big misstep of this, this movie.
Either he wanted that to be the case where you felt it, or he wanted it to almost be like purposely, like these two characters are distanced from each other and like there isn't that history. But almost the whole movie is about the history between Bill and all these other assassins and like the revenge. What
links them all. Yeah. On. That's why you're getting all this background information for most of the movie.
Yeah. And I maybe it just doesn't hit like the Oven stuff. Like I didn't mind any of the scenes that like they did like backstory about Oven, but like at the end of the day, I didn't feel...
I liked the action of those. I liked the fact I liked that. I just don't think Lucy Liu's a very strong actress, but I liked the writing and I liked the action.
Exactly. I mean, I like the action in that too. So it was almost like, yeah, give me this backstory. But when it came to the final scene, it was like, there wasn't much like tension there. And I don't know why it was like lacking the tension. Cause like, we can jump all the way back to the beginning. The opening scene where he's talking to her, he's like, well, I never meant to be malicious. I would never do that to you. Like, blah, 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 blah. You're my girl. And then he just pops a cap on her, like in her head, or tries to shoot her in the head. That scene jump scared the crap out of me. Like, I just did not expect a gun to go off. And it's actually like really well done. Like the black and white and the dialogue and, you know, what Uma Thurman looks like on the ground and stuff like that. So I just think like some of this movie for the most part is awesome to look at, awesome action, awesome dialogue, well written. And then you get to a couple of scenes where it's like, this isn't bad. It's just not like A+ level. It's more like B+, B. And that's kind of how I felt about the movie overall, was like, this movie isn't bad. This movie's really good. And I would recommend this movie to almost anybody, but I don't think I can put it on the same like pedestal as like, yes, this is an A+ Tarantino movie. You have to watch this movie.
Another example of it just feels like it's trying too hard to be iconic and cool is like, and there are people that love this. So that's what I'm saying. It might work for some people, but like really the car is called the Pussy Wagon. Like
that's hilarious.
That just felt like one of those things where it's like, you just wanted to have something that's quotable, that's, you know, people are going to recognize as, Tarantino came up with that. Like, it didn't feel natural. Didn't feel like it fit the world. That's
amazing to me.
It was odd to me, but
No, I didn't like it in the sense of like, oh, that takes the movie to like a next level for me. It was more just like I just found it hilarious that he called.
I just kind of found myself rolling my eyes.
Right. Oh, that's fair. Yeah, I mean, but then the callback in volume two to when Estevan goes, oh, I heard you were driving like a truck, and she's like, oh, you know, the wagon gave out on me. And she's like driving this like, I don't even know. I'm terrible with cars sometimes. Like, I think she was driving like a Chrysler or something. It was like, yeah, she was driving like this old like 1960s like Chrysler or whatever. I'm like, that's kind of funny. But yeah.
By the way, would you like to guess where this thing is on the IMDb top 250?
It's gotta be like Kill Bill Volume 1 has to be like 75.
152.
Man. But the way people talk about it, you would think it's like in the top 100.
Like, I like to kind of separate Tarantino movies into three tiers.
Yeah.
There's Pulp Fiction, and that's on a tier of its own.
That's not entirely true, but okay, go ahead.
I think that people kind of hold it up as like the Tarantino untouchable movie.
And then you have
the movies that are considered to be like Tarantino's classics. Reservoir Dogs, Kill Bill Volume 1, Inglourious Bastards, Django Unchained.
Yeah, that's fair.
And then you have good Tarantino movies, maybe underrated, maybe overrated. Jackie Brown, Kill Bill Volume 2, The Hateful Eight. And you have Once Upon a Time in Hollywood just kind of floating out there. Depending on who you talk to, it could be in any of those tiers, except for
right. Someone's like, actually, that's closer to like the untouchable Pulp Fiction tier than it is.
Yeah.
Like, it's worst movie. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one that is like people are all over the place.
We'll
get
to it, but I saw that movie.
Yeah, next one.
I saw that movie 5 times in theaters. So,
oh wow,
I think I know where we stand.
Yeah, where you fall, thanks.
Yeah, I think we know where we stand on that one. But
I don't know if this was a $30 million budget or if the two of them combined
for a
$30 million budget. But
I don't think kung fu movies like that type of action stuff is hard to do. Like, you definitely need like.
Well, I bet it's tough to do. It's just not as expensive.
No, it's not as expensive. This is what I meant to. Yeah, that's what I meant. It's incredibly tough to do from like an execution standpoint, and that's why movies fail at it. But
immense amounts of choreography.
Yes, but yeah, expense wise, I don't think it costs as much. It's like more practical effects and like stuff.
It was
like that,
giant so. Success. $30 million budget made $180 million worldwide. Gosh. $70 million.
Well, of
domestically.
Course, people thought this was awesome. Like. We're getting a Tarantino kung fu movie. Like, people were.
Yeah, that was the pitch. Hey, Tarantino was directing an homage to, the kung fu martial arts movies of yesteryear, and that's all people needed to know. Like, I'm in.
I mean, I would be in too. Like, yeah. I mean, I think I saw Kill Bill 2, and I think I told you, I think I saw Volume 2 before I saw Volume 1, which is kind of funny, because I think I just saw Volume 2, like, randomly one day. But after watching it as, like, a whole movie, or, like, together, kind of, I totally buy, like, why people think this movie's awesome. But if we get to grades...
Yeah, let's do it.
I'm not quite there with everyone else.
Where you at?
Yeah, go ahead and do yours, because I want to pull up my letterbox.
Okay.
Sure. I didn't give a grade specifically yet. I gave stars, so I just want to make sure I know what grade I actually want to give. So go ahead.
I'm at a B, 77.70. That's where I have Kill Bill Volume 1, and I know someone out there wants to kill me for having it lower than Ghost, but, you know... I liked Ghost more. I think that this movie has a lot higher highs than Ghost did, because this movie does have some really cool action sequences and fun flashbacks, but I also think that it's not for me as much as other Tarantino movies are, and that's okay. There are people that, you know, Django Unchained wasn't for them. There are people who Once Upon a Time in Hollywood wasn't for them. I feel like everyone has one Tarantino movie that is one of the more liked and respected ones that they're just like, maybe that one, not for me.
Yeah. So after looking at our review list, I'm going to go, I have 3.5 stars, B+, but I think it's a higher B+. I think when I originally texted you, I was like, wow, this feels like an A-minus, you know, type movie. I think I as the movie went on, I got a little lower on it. Not that low on the B-plus scale, though. I'm going to go 91.2 on the B-plus scale. So okay. Just well, above hey. The Notebook, below the Green Mile, but yeah.
You know, tell me why. Well, we've talked about a lot of the negatives. Tell me why.
Yeah, I think positive wise, I just think some of the shots are like really cool. It's like vintage Tarantino. The messing with time, I just love that aspect of his directing, to be honest. And it's hard for me to like say this is like a B minus movie more than a B plus. I think for most of the movie, I was at like an A minus. And some of the scenes I was like, oh, that's like an A plus, but then some of the other scenes, you know, you're at like a B plus. So it kind of averages out to like an A minus. And then I just think the final scene and like the impact, the cliffhanger is really cool. I like the cliffhanger. The cliffhanger is awesome, but the final scenes leading up to that just didn't hit as well. And so for me, that's more like B plus than A minus territory. Still like the movie. But if I was on Letterboxd, I don't think I would give this like the heart. Like, I like this movie. I think I would just be like, this movie's really good, and I would recommend it to people. But I wouldn't be like, oh, I like this movie. Kind of.
I need to start retroactively. I've only given the heart to one movie ever, and that is Taylor Swift: The Eras Tour. Because I didn't think that I was going to. I didn't want to rate that movie, so I'll just go, yeah, no, I really enjoyed myself with that. Let me give it a heart.
Yeah,
I don't give a heart. I just give my grade.
Yeah, there's different ways to think about it. I've heard some people be like, if I give them a movie like a 1 star, but I liked it in like air quotes, then they would give it like a like, as like, this is a terrible movie, but like,
it's one
of
those
like, yeah, I have fun with it type of movie. Or for, yeah, but for me, like, I give the like, you know, symbol to A minus and above, basically. The only B plus on my list that has it is Mario Brothers, because Super Mario Brothers movie is awesome. So
not the Beekeeper.
Well, yeah, the Beekeeper might have a like on it too. Now that I think about it, those two B pluses are probably the ones that have likes on it. And if the Beekeeper doesn't have a like on it, I'll probably go put a like on it after this. So, yeah, but that's kind of how I use the like, is like A minus and above is kind of what a like is. So didn't quite get to that for this one, but very close on my scale, to be honest.
All right, let's go ahead and dive into Kill Bill Volume 2. Very, I mean, you know,
you just want to start at the beginning. You just want
that cliffhanger that you're talking about is, yeah. You know, after she kills Oren, you get that voiceover of like, "Hey, do you know that? Does she know that her daughter's alive?" Man. And that's kind of the big like end reveal of the first movie. Is like, not only is she coming back for revenge, but she's going to eventually find out that her daughter is alive. And I liked in the first movie how the movie kind of kept Bill at an arm's distance. You never really saw him much. You heard from him every now and then, but he was more of just like this guy that you heard about. And I really liked that. That was one of the better qualities of Volume 1. It made you really interested to see, like, this Bill guy seems like he's very on top of things. He knows what he's doing. He has this reputation. Everyone knows him. I can't wait to see what this guy is like. And I'm very mixed. Part of me thinks that Bill in this movie was a lot of fun, and I really enjoyed David Carradine's performance. And the other part of me thinks it got a little Matrix Reloaded for me. I guess we're going back to the Matrix, where at the end of the Matrix, have you ever seen Matrix Reloaded, Brandon?
I haven't, sadly. I think I've only seen one Matrix.
It's a spoiler, but it's not a spoiler.
Yeah, it's okay. I'll watch it at some point.
There's a part at the end of the movie where an old man is explaining something. And you get to a point where you're like, this motherfucker's just been talking. Like, I don't know if he's been saying anything. But words have been coming out of his mouth. I don't know if he knows what he's saying. But he's been talking. And I feel like there was a little bit of that with David Carradine in this movie. Again, not his fault. He said what Quentin Tarantino put on the page. I thought that he had a really good monologue about Superman and Clark Kent that I thought was interesting.
That monologue at the end.
I thought that was strong. Yeah. It was this whole thing about how, Superman and why he's different than other superheroes is because the disguise isn't the superhero. The disguise is, hey, I'm just a normal person. And how the bride is very similar. How if she just wanted to be a mom, cut coupons, you know, go to PTA meetings, that would be the disguise, kind of like Superman. And I thought, wow, that was a really well done monologue. But then we have to hear like five more monologues directly after that. And it kind of lessens the importance. It's like if you give six of them in a row, none of them are really all that important or special. And there was a lot of that at the end of this movie to me that I think kind of lessened the impact of, and maybe I'm just cutting too close to the end of the movie and we need to set things up, but really in Kill Bill Volume 2, it's all about killing Bill. We got to get to Bill. That's what you come to Volume 2 to see. And David Carradine has a much more expanded role in this movie than in the first one. And there's a lot of stuff that I liked from him and a lot of stuff that I didn't. It's like the whole movie as a, the whole series as a whole. There's things I love and there's things that I'm like, wow, I really wish that you had done that a little differently or cut some here.
It's not bad. It's just like, I wish it was a little bit different. Yeah, I totally understand what you're saying. Like, I guess my point is, but let's just get into it. Michael Madsen as Buck.
Loved him in Reservoir Dogs.
I'm gonna go out on a limb and say you did not like his scenes, most likely.
I liked him. I really liked him. There's a scene with him and Daryl Hannah where they're exchanging a sword for money. And where that goes, she kills him. She has a snake in there. She's a snake in the money suitcase.
A black mamba,
it comes out and it bites him, and she die or he dies. And I thought that that was a really good scene. And Michael Madsen, I think, is very good in this movie. However, there's an entire sequence with him at a strip club that I'm like, you could have easily cut this out of the movie. This is just like pointless.
Yeah. So I think it definitely could have been at least shortened, if not cut completely. But I think I understand where Tarantino was going with it and like where he was doing with it. He was basically trying to show that like Michael Madsen's character was like
desperate for money,
you know, desperate for money at the very end. And actually, when you talk about needle drops, I think the needle drop of Johnny Cash's song right before he shoots the bride in the chest with the rock salt is actually like really well done. Where it's like, I was a winner, but now I'm down on my luck. And it was like, and then he just shoots her with the shotgun. I think that's hilarious. But I actually like the Michael Madsen scenes. I was curious if you liked them too. But I think that might be the strongest part of the movie up until like the scene with Elle and the fight scene, obviously, inside of his trailer after he obviously passes away. But then there's a fight scene between Elle and Uma Thurman's character, the bride, and that fight scene is kind of awesome. I do like how she goes, there's this kung fu master named Shay Mei that like apparently has taught all these... Pei Mei.
You had the rhyming down, but the word's wrong.
I did. Pei Mei, who is like taught all of these people like basically the martial arts that they use or like the kung fu that they use. I mean, he's got to be the master of like every person. He's Bill's master, right? He's Uma Thurman's character, Daryl Hannah's character, like all the assassins in the Viper assassin game. Like he's got to be like the iconic like kung fu artist. And you find out that like Elle's character has an eye patch. And it turns out that like Shay Mei like basically grabbed her eyeball. Sorry. I need to just think of Pei Wei and then say Pei Mei. Yeah. Pei Mei grabs her eyeball out of her eye. Like just out of her eye. And Uma Thurman's character goes, well, what did you say to Pei Mei to provoke him to do that to you? And she said, well, what was it? I called him an old...
A miserable old fool.
Yeah, a miserable old fool. She's like, well, that will do it to you. And I was like, that's
I actually, like I said, there were some characters where you felt the history.
Yeah.
I never felt the history between Lucy Liu and Uma Thurman. I never felt the history between Michael Madsen and Uma Thurman. I felt the history between Daryl Hannah and Uma Thurman.
Yeah.
I felt like these two never really liked each other.
There was something there. Yeah.
Like Vivica A. Fox and Uma Thurman, I feel like they were friends, but now they're kind of pissed off. I felt like these two were always a bit competitive with each other. And Daryl Hannah specifically just always had it out for Uma Thurman. And their fight scene was, I'm with you. I thought that it was one of the better parts of the movie.
Yeah. And then after, you know, they're both fighting each other with these Hanzo swords, which is crazy. Like, you know, apparently Michael Madsen's character, Bub, was like, oh, I pawned my...
I sold it for $200. Yeah,
for $200. No, I didn't. No, you didn't. Come on. Let's be honest. So they're both fighting with these, like, samurai swords. And then I think one of the best, like, and honestly grossest scenes is when Uma Thurman's character does the exact same thing that Peimei did and snatches out her other eye. So then she's completely blind. And she's just like going around the trailer, like screaming, yelling, like has no idea where Uma Thurman is. It's like, I'll kill you, bitch. Like I can't believe you did that to me. And then the bride drops the eyeball on the ground and then squishes it. That is absolutely disgusting. And I think it's a great wrap up to the fight scene. Cause like Uma Thurman's character doesn't give a rat's ass if she kills L. She just wants L to like suffer, basically. She's like, yeah, that was like part of my revenge. It's like, I'm not here to kill you. I'm just here to like basically make sure you like are have a miserable life. And I think that's really well done.
At that point of things, to me, it just seemed like, I don't care if you die. I just need you out of the way to get to Bill.
Right.
That's what it seemed like to me. And I kind of appreciated the fact. If there's one thing about Kill Bill Volume 2 that I did feel is I felt that Uma Thurman, by the time that she gets to Bill, she is exhausted.
Yeah, she's like, I'm done with this.
I definitely felt that towards the end of things. But getting back to Peimei for a point, this motherfucker's a cartoon. Like, like with his eyebrows, and he keeps on like flipping his beard, and
it's a nice beard.
Like this guy's a cartoon, and that's the one complaint that I have, that Tarantino would be like, yeah, that's on purpose. I did that for a reason, and I get that. To me, it just kept taking me out of. There's a good chance that I'm missing the point of this movie. That someone that loves this movie would say, you're missing all the things that make it great. And to me, it's just, it's just not for me.
Yeah, I 100% get your complaints. I think if you were to say that to somebody who absolutely loves this movie and loves this movie for specific reasons, I would tell you, well, you have to go watch the 1970s Kung Fu movies. You have to go watch Bruce Lee movies. Like, you have to go watch these, like, iconic Kung Fu movies.
I was going to say, I think it goes even further back than that, but...
Yeah, it probably does. I mean, it goes back to, like, the 50s, 40s, 50s
and 60s.
Yeah, but... 50s, yeah. But my point was, I think if you're missing those iconic movies, and I've seen a couple of them. I haven't seen like all of them. I have one friend who like that's all they would do in college, apparently, is they would just pull up like Bruce Lee Kung Fu movies and be like, oh, let's go through Bruce Lee's volume. And he's like, this is actually like they're not incredibly like well-made movies sometimes, but they're like, you know, very cool action Kung Fu movies. I think if you haven't seen those, I think you're just missing like a really key part of it. And I get your complaint, because it almost feels like you have to do homework to watch Kill Bill. Like, and I totally understand that point of view.
Also, I want to say a good hearty fuck you to Harvey Weinstein again. Yeah, just, you know, right, apart fair. From the regular.
Oh, no, just keep putting it out there. Yeah, I mean.
But Quentin Tarantino has always maintained that I'm only going to make 10 movies. So congratulations, Harvey Weinstein. You took a movie away from us.
This movie?
No. Well, yeah, if Kill Bill was one movie, Tarantino would have made one more movie.
It's one movie. Let's just say it's a
one He movie. Considers it to be two. We lost one movie because of Harvey Weinstein.
Quentin's being lazy. That's lazy.
Well, I would like to tell Quentin Tarantino, you know you're allowed to make more than 10 movies, right? That's a thing you can do. Ask Ridley Scott. I mean, granted, Ridley Scott pumps out, trash like House of Gucci now, but...
Oh, but he also pumps out...
Like The Martian and The Last Duel. So, right, you'll get some good stuff in between the bullshit.
Right. I guess the last thing I have for Uma Thurman's character is that opening monologue is actually, it's cool. I think it's awesome. It kind of, puts you in the movie immediately. And then the scene with the massacre at Two Pines, I kind of fuck with that a little
bit. Did you get any... Did you think there was a point and purpose to them keeping her name a secret?
Not really. I think
it was Beatrix Kiddo.
Yeah,
and why was that information withheld? What was the point and purpose of that?
I think he was just trying something different. Like, to be fair, if you watch this movie as one continuous thing, and you're watching Volume One, you're like, well, that's kind of odd that they bleeped her name out, and then immediately in Volume Two, they just go oh, this is Beatrix, and then it's like, oh, okay, so that's her name. And then my favorite part is because he's messing with time. There's points in the movie where he jumps back and then he jumps forward. So in the case of when they reveal that her name's Beatrix, it's at the wedding chapel, in that scene where it basically kicks off the whole Kill Bill revenge tour. Her name is mentioned. But then in the older parts of the timeline, her name isn't mentioned. So I wonder if it's a Voldemort situation. Her name shall not be said or something. Maybe that's what he's going for. I don't know. But I do like that he was messing with the timeline a little bit. And I think that's... would you agree that that's probably Tarantino's, best quality or best characteristic in his movies is that he's able to mess with time better than most people? Because I think that's really his strong point. I think if other people try to do what he does in terms of messing with time, I just don't think it works. And I think
I don't really think about that with Tarantino.
I know you don't really think about it, but because he does it a lot. He really does.
If you look at his later movies, he doesn't do it too much.
Right, but these early movies, he's doing it all the time.
Yeah, no, Pulp Fiction, Reservoir Dogs, this. Yeah, no, there's definitely a lot of that in
there.
Even
Django, he's going back and forth between there's flashbacks and stuff like that. He uses flashbacks a ton. He really does, if we're being honest.
I guess.
Yeah, I guess I was just...
a lot with him, though.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. I was just thinking, is there another director that, really pulls off?
Really?
Really?
Really? You're going to make me bring up?
There is one director. Yeah, Christopher Nolan does it.
Come on.
But outside of Nolan, it's not really people's,
I'm sure there's someone... And I'm just, I'm just blanking on it, and we'll get to it. I know that.
I guess my point was that I just really like that in this movie. I like the time manipulation and jumping back.
Sooner rather than later, probably in the next month, if not less. No, I'd say a month or two. We're gonna get into Francis Ford Coppola, and Godfather 2 does that a lot.
Yeah,
there's a lot of
jumping around.
Exactly. So, I haven't seen too many other Francis Ford Coppola movies, so I don't know.
Have you seen Apocalypse Now?
I have not. Can't wait to get to it. I haven't seen Bram Stoker's Dracula, The Conversation, any of that. So maybe there's some of that in there, but I know The Godfather 2 uses it quite a bit.
Yeah, that's fair. I guess my whole arching point was I really liked it in this movie, and all of his other early movies where he's done it, I really like it too. So I just think he pulls it off really well, and it doesn't always make sense, but it comes together at the end, and that's what I can really appreciate.
Speaking of the end, let's talk about it. At the end, she finds out that Bill is basically, he is the father of her kid, and has been taking care of this little girl, And there's all these conversations about death. And again, like, Bill goes on like six monologues. One of them's fantastic. Two of them are good. And the other three are like, okay, can we get to the point? And
right
at the end, they have this fight. And she does this thing called the 5-point palm exploding heart technique, which, I'm sorry, but is this Kung Fu Panda? This felt very, like, I was just waiting on her to say skadoosh.
This is like, this is like Bruce Lee's like 6-inch punch.
I know that there's a lot of inspiration from those movies in Kung. It works better in a cartoon.
No, right? It does.
That type of thing. And it's something that you never see her learn. I never got the progress. I would have liked to have seen her earn the respect of Pei Mei. You never see that.
To be fair, she's doing the 6-inch punch against the wood to like break it. So yes, she's definitely like,
and you see the work that went into that, and you see the right results. And so when that happens, you're like, all right, it's earned. This right doesn't have the same feel.
No, it's the climax
of two movies.
Yeah. I will say, maybe, just maybe, it's a purposeful move by Tarantino, because she never mentions it to him. And when you see it, I guess maybe he wants like a shock factor.
It's
like,
supposed to be a surprise to everybody.
That's the 5-finger punch or whatever. Yeah, I mean.
Brandon, I want you to know something, and I think you do know this. There is no such thing as an unpurposeful move from Quentin Tarantino. Everything that is on
point
that screen has been meticulously planned out. There's no accidents.
Do you think his 10th movie is just going to be like, fuck, I'm just going to put stuff on the screen? He's like, I don't care. He's like,
his 10th movie is just going to be a whole lot of, like, you know, audio accidents and...
Yeah, I think they've already announced what it is, but it's just going to be, like, a bunch of random scenes and stuff like that.
I want to say Brad Pitt is in it, and maybe... I feel like I've heard Miles Teller, which, you know, good. I love the guy, but...
Right, that's a very good point. That Tarantino, like, everything he does, like, definitely has a purpose to it. That's what it is. Is he's just trying to shock the audience? I do like the exchange, because what I found hilarious as a callback is when Bill does get hit with that move, he goes, "Well, you know, I'm about to die, but I have this time until I stand up and take 5 steps." And so it's just like another monologue on top of him getting hit. And he's like, "Do I look good?" And she's like, "Yeah, I think you're ready." And he stands up and he takes his 1, 2, 4, 5 steps. And then he falls over. And it's like, okay, that was like a good callback to like what the move actually does to people. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I think the monologues are like a little bit weird from, you know, Bill's character.
There's just too many of them.
I think that's what, like, loves the point, right? That was the point, is that he just like loves to talk.
There's a point to all of this that doesn't mean I have to like it.
No, you don't have to like it. I'm just saying that, I mean, Tarantino really tries to hammer home the fact that this dude loves to talk.
Yeah.
He's just hammering it home. Yeah, I guess. Do you want to get to grades? Because
yeah, and my grade's not too much different than the first one. Although I thought that I was going to, I liked the opening part of 2 better, but I don't think it concluded very strongly. So I am a little lower on volume 2 than I am volume 1. I went B, so same grade, 10.25%, so on the lower end of a B. And this is definitely by most considered to be weaker than volume 1, because guess what? This isn't on the IMDb top 250. But you can't review volume 1 with something else, right? You have to review 1 and 2.
Fair. You might be shocked. I have this movie ahead of volume 1.
No, I get it. I can completely understand that.
I think it's better.
It's more dialogue heavy than the first one. The first one's more action based.
Yeah, I have this one as an A- It's below The Notebook, but A minus 75.2.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is the first time we've had a bit of a major gap where I am and where you are.
I like the movie. I can't really explain like why I like the movie better than one, because I think one has better action scenes, but I think two is just like, here's Uma Thurman at her best, and I really, really like it. I don't like it as much as his other Tarantino movies, but I like it.
I expected to like two a little bit more because
yeah,
everyone told me that one was action, two was dialogue. And for me personally, if I got to take one of those two with Tarantino, give me the dialogue. Because
yeah,
that's typically what
day.
I like more with Tarantino. It's the classic tomato-based versus vinegar-based argument. Which one do you like more? Which Tarantino do you like more? And yeah. I felt that this movie just did a little bit too much meandering at the end and was a little too had a little bit too much. There are a lot of Tarantino dialogue scenes in movies that are quote-unquote pointless, but like the Royale with cheese thing is iconic. The back and forth with that, does it add much to the movie? Absolutely not. But it adds enjoyment to the movie because you love seeing these characters go back and forth. And to me,
right,
when this movie tried to have those superfluous conversations that don't really have much bearing on the
overall script. Are you thinking about
Esteban?
Esteban is the...
Whether it's Esteban or whether it's that that scene at the strip club. Yeah, a lot of those types of conversation scenes just didn't really hit for me the same way that the stuff in Pulp Fiction did, or even the stuff in Reservoir Dogs, kind of the side conversations. Django Unchained, we had the conversation about how he was trying to explain to the one slave how to treat Django, and that was just a side conversation that was somehow really interesting. And that's the kind of thing that I think that this movie lacks for me personally. But if you love these Kill Bill movies, and I'm glad that you really liked both of them.
Yeah.
It seems like you were really, you didn't love either of them, but you really liked them. And I'm glad that you were able to, that you were able to find an entry point that I just wasn't.
No, that's a good synopsis of how I feel about these movies. I like them. I don't love them. But I think it is kind of funny that they're sandwiched in between The Notebook at A-88.5 and The French Connection at 87.8 B+. So I do find it funny that they're sandwiched in between The Notebook and The French Connection. Who would have ever thought that as a combo of Kill Bill movies in between two random movies that we have reviewed so far? So I think that's very funny.
Yeah, I've been kind of keeping track of the years on my Letterboxd.
Yeah, I'm not gonna do that, but yeah.
I've seen four movies in both 2004 and 2003, and funny enough, Kill Bill Volume 2 was my least favorite movie I've seen so far in 2004, since I've been really keeping track of this, behind Shrek 2, The Notebook, and the original Saw.
Yeah, oh, well, the original Saw is the best Saw, so.
And then in 2003, Kill Bill Volume 1 is 3 out of 4. I've got Elf at number 1, Touch the Timeless Christmas Classic. X2, X-Men United, which I think is the best of the original X-Men movies. And then behind Kill Bill Volume 1, not as bad as people think it is, but still nowhere near as good as the first two, Terminator 3, Rise of the Machines.
Mm. Yep, that's
so
fair.
Got four of those, and I have, as far as my reviews for this, Kill Bill Volume 1, again, right behind Ghost, right in front of Warm Bodies. Kill Bill Volume 2, behind Warm Bodies, but a good bit in front of Now You See Me.
That's fair. I mean, you know, as we keep doing these movies, I think I'm just going to realize that, like, as I said at the last podcast, Tarantino is just one of my favorite directors. So I was going to say actors, but directors.
No.
yes, directors.
Well, that will be put to the test next week, because the next reviews that we are going to do are two of his more recent movies. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, his most recent movie, and Inglorious Bastards.
Those are going to be A's. I can already tell.
I don't know where I'm going to fall on these. I'm going to keep that a little close to the chest. And then that, we'll get to the two most underrated, or I don't say underrated, underappreciated Tarantino movies, that being Jackie Brown and The Hateful Eight. As we wrap up Quentin Tarantino, Brandon, he's made 9 movies. We've seen over half of them now. We've seen 5.
We can start making a Tarantino list.
We're going to have Hey, at the end of Jackie Brown and Hateful Eight, we'll have our official Tarantino rankings. So I can't wait to do that.
We should make a combined one, but yeah, we'll see. Maybe we
Oh, yeah, I'd like that too.
The numbers, yeah. But sounds good, man. I always willing to talk about Tarantino.
Let's do it. All right. I'll talk to you about Inglourious Basterds, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood next week. Thanks for listening, and please check out these movies. Just because we weren't as crazy about them as other people are does not mean that you shouldn't check them out. Please give them a watch, form your own opinion, and come back next week.